Welcome to How to Be Hopeful. My name's Bernadette Russell, and this is my podcast all about hope, how to find hope and how to keep hold of it once we've found it. I'm speaking to you on the Festival of Lammas, which is a Saxon holiday that's celebrated by lots of people, celebrated as a sort of relating to the harvesting of grain. The first sheaf of grain used to be ceremonially baked into a loaf and eaten by the people, which sounds delicious. Eating the bread of the gods, giving us life. Lovely traditions, and of course into Christian traditions as well as the traditions of pagan peoples and the goddess and the green man and all that stuff. So I'm enjoying a lot of tree lore and tree activities this weekend and really enjoying finding out about all of that. So I thought this week would be an amazing opportunity to speak to an incredible artist and activist, Evgenia Emets, whose breathtaking ambition, which you'll hear about shortly, absolutely captivated me when I was lucky enough to go to one of her talks with my friend Emma about a year ago now, I think. So I hope you enjoy finding out how to find hope by planting a forest and by being in the forest on this Festival of Lammas.
Hello, my name is Evgenia Emets. I'm an artist. I live in Portugal at the moment. I'm based here. And how do I feel today? I feel awake. I feel grounded. I feel positive and hopeful. I see blue sky and a bit of wind behind my window in the garden, and the grass is moving around, so it's beautiful.
That's lovely. I just before I called you, actually, I was sitting in my garden. It's really nice. Surrounded, you'll be pleased to hear, by bees.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, very nice. So I like to begin by asking people, as I mentioned to you, if there is anything this week or in the last few days that's made you feel hopeful or happy, and if so, what that thing might have been and why.
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting question, because just yesterday, so the week for me starts more or less Monday, and yesterday I took a day off and my friend took me to a nearby town. And we already had some conversations with people in this town, and we identified that near this town there is a potential eternal forest sanctuary. So there's potential forest which can become a sanctuary in the future. So I decided to go and have a look at it. And so we walked it, and we were absolutely, we were in awe of what is already there. So we walked, it's a whole mountain, and it's really beautiful. It's really biodiverse. There's a lot of different varieties of trees, flowers, medicinal herbs, insects. It's fantastic. It's gorgeous. It's huge. We were hearing a lot of noise from the nearby highway, from cars. And then we sat down to just meditate and think about it. And suddenly came to me, and I thought, wow, the noise is actually not a problem after maybe 50, 70 years. Because the hope is that maybe our world will become quieter and we won't have so much noise interference from the cars that we are driving now, and cars will become quieter too. So, yeah, so yesterday I had a glimpse of the future in that sense, that maybe sanctuaries, creating sanctuaries, would be easier because there will be more places, possibilities for them, even not far from the main roads, because right now it's just not possible to go and relax in these places because it's just so noisy. But I thought, if I'm building a project which goes into the future, you know, it might not be the issue just after 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, that's true. In many of the conversations and projections that I've certainly heard about and borne witness to have said exactly what you've said, that actually vehicles will be much quieter, even to the extent that one of the scientists that I work with quite a lot said to me, we're going to have to look at how we provide them with some noise so that they're not dangerous, because they're so quiet that that's a challenge. So that's interesting. We should actually beautiful. What a lovely experience. Maybe just to skip back a little bit, because I, of course, am familiar with your work because I heard you give that amazing talk about your project Eternal Forests. Would it be okay to just skip back a little bit and describe what it is?
Of course, of course. I'm happy to share. So Eternal Forest is an art project. First of all, it's ongoing long-term project, which I believe will continue as long as I'm alive and hopefully beyond. That's my hope. And the project started just by me seeing, you know, the loss of biodiversity and the possibility of really creating spaces in nature through art, through poetry, through storytelling, where we could go and treat these spaces as sacred and connect with nature in a deeper way and learn from nature. And it's like, on the surface, it sounds like, well, yeah, we're learning from nature anyways. Everywhere we go, nature is everywhere. It surrounds us. But I feel that there is actually a space and a need and an opening to create spaces which are created with purpose, intention, created perhaps by communities and through art, and are protected by communities in the long run. So the project started 3 years ago, and it's going really well. It continues, and it connects several aspects. It connects Eternal Forest experiences, where I invite people to go into the forest and experience through poetry and art how they might be going just a little bit deeper. It connects through creating those physical spaces around the world, and we're starting in Portugal right now. And it connects through other artworks and poetry and books and collaboration also with other artists, which is starting to pick up right now through some conversations. So it's like a multidisciplinary project which engages people on so many different levels, and also people with different skills who might know much more about ecology and biology and biodiversity than me. So I'm kind of like a glue of this project, and then bringing people into it to see how we can collaborate together to create those spaces.
When I saw you speak, what really struck me was how fantastically ambitious it was, and I really enjoyed hearing about the ambitiousness of it in terms of the time scale was really extraordinary, and how sort of beautiful that is. Actually, it's great to hear so many things seem to be quite quick and short, that's why I couldn't get it out of my head when I heard you speak about it. When you first engaged with your community in Portugal, what was the initial reaction from local people when you spoke of your intention?
So I started this particular development, which I call Eternal Forest Sanctuary, which is more connected with the physical space rather than, you know, exploration, like artistic exploration of relationship between humans and forest. I started it last year, which was a commission from Bienal de Coruj, which is a place in central Portugal. And my work there was to really try to bring community into the forest in a different kind of way. So what I did simply was an installation in the forest, which was ephemeral installation based on poetry and writing bits of manifesto that I created inside the land. And then I took people on a silent walk, which was, imagine, it was a two-hour walk. Narrated through storytelling, poetry, and letting people to really be inside the landscape, to become the landscape, and to really go on a very, very slow pace. And at the beginning, there were a lot of concerns that people actually won't be able to make it. So they would start talking, they would start being kind of anxious and wanting to walk faster. In fact, everybody was really together, and it really worked. And afterwards, people told me that I need to do more work like that. So I think people are ready. I think people don't necessarily know how to enter that space, how to go deeper, and how to, you know, open these doors that are already open for us, but like they need to find their own way. And I think through art, we can find new, maybe unusual ways of letting ourselves enter that space. So my project was met with a lot of interest and a lot of follow-up. So right now, for example, in that particular land, the municipality is creating their own forest park, and my walk that I created, the poetry walk, would be integrated into the landscape and will basically stay there for kind of hopefully forever. So it will be more fixed with natural materials, wood, carving, etc. And people would be able to just go by themselves and enjoy it. And in that sense, art is like an inspiration. It's a little guide to inspire, to go deeper, to think, to consider parts and aspects of our life that we haven't really paid our attention to so far.
It occurred to me as well that there must be so many practical considerations. So there's the beauty of the ambition and the execution of your project, but I was thinking you just, I guess, have to say, can we use this bit of land? And, you know, there's lots of sort of practical considerations and challenges, I'm assuming. How hard was it to sort of, or how hard will it be to get hold of land, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you touch the land as an artist, it starts, and it can go with one particular place for anything from a couple of years to 10 years. Some of the best examples of land art or art connected, ecological art that connects with actually doing something with a piece of land, sometimes they went for, in the 60s and 70s, these negotiations, they went for like 10, 15 years before an artist could actually complete the artwork. I think now things are shifting. Also, we have a lot of precedents in the US, in Europe. I think we have already foundations and collectors and museums that totally understand that work. And I think that it will be easier for our generation to do work like that, hopefully. But of course, you are totally right. There are still challenges, because the whole idea of private property, of the land, of a piece of forest, is something that I believe in the future will not exist. But it exists now. And I think it's a good and a bad thing. And we can deal with that. We can work with what is. So, for example, when I'm thinking, okay, how can we establish 1,000 eternal forest sanctuaries and protect them for 1,000 years? On one hand, it's a dream, it's a vision. On the other hand, it actually taps directly into the practical issues and how we can perhaps move away from certain patterns in our society that don't serve us anymore and move towards the patterns that are actually emerging and are going to serve the change. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples. For example, is law situation. So right now, it's not possible to say we can protect the land for 1,000 years. It's just not in our law. However, I have been speaking to lawyers who work with ecology, and they are saying that there is absolutely no question that we can decide as society what is exactly that we want to do, and it's possible to change those time limits when we saying that that land needs to be protected for X amount of years, and we can shift that kind of border from, for example, 99 years, 100 years to 1,000 years. So that shouldn't be a problem. Is the law is something that human beings write and they agree on it and they decide this is what's going to serve the activities and the infrastructure and what we want to do in the world. So that is something that's created by human beings. So another practical consideration is, of course, how do we get the land and how do we proceed with all the necessary negotiations? As soon as you touch the land, you always have a whole list of stakeholders. It could be private land, it could be municipal land. We are now talking to several locations in Portugal. Some of them are private lands. Some of them belongs to municipalities. Some of them are future emerging communities, like a cooperative land. And all of them are interested. And of course, all of them require different kind of approaches and different kind of style of negotiation and agreement. So right now, basically what I'm doing is working with a circle of people who help me to put this project on a more like a stable foundation. And we are thinking about, could we emerge in the next 2-3 years a series of models, like a working solutions for this project that we could then use in any location, anywhere in the world.
So that's fantastic.
It's quite a practical step, I think. That
it's fantastic as well, because they're varied in the way you described. It means that if anybody approaches you or thinks, well, I've got this kind of space, that there might be an example that's close to their kind of space. So that sounds
absolutely
so helpful. That's fantastic. Well, congratulations. I don't think when we first met, I don't think that was happening. So that's so exciting.
No. It's a new thing. I think when we first met and I shared the project, I think it was more about the bigger vision, like really what is the big vision? What is the dream? Right now I'm exploring elements of this dream and how to, you know, bring this dream into this world, into the reality. And so kind of in a way clarifying the vision through practical solutions.
Yeah, no, it's very, very exciting. I'm sort of really encouraged by how people have responded to it. I'm not surprised, but I'm really encouraged. And in many conversations that I've had with people recently those kind of conversations around, well, of course everybody is wanting to reconnect with nature, because that yearning to connect is very profound and very deep in us. And I wondered if you've noticed through your work and through your exploration that do you feel that there's a sort of increase in a desire to reconnect? Or is it more that you're just noticing it?
Well, I have been speaking to several organizations and a lot of people, and have been on many Zooms, for example, during this last 2-3 months quarantine time. And what I have noticed and what other people are noticing is people realize that one of the first necessities that came up for them during this lockdown time in many places, especially in big cities, is nature. So people were trying to go to parks. Parks were all absolutely overflowing with people. Of course, people who live outside of big cities are in a much better situation, because they can just walk out of their house and they go to their local forest, local grove, and it's much easier. So I think along with other necessities, like primary necessities that people realized is much more valuable than just accumulating goods and buying more cars and houses, etc., things like family, you know, things that you actually can't put monetary value on, among them is nature, is forests and natural places, and places where we can go ground ourselves and relax and breathe fully and enjoy. So that is really highlighted right now, and I think a lot of people are thinking how they can increase that time in nature for themselves. So I think it's a lot of opportunities for us to think how we can now open that portal, that door that's already open for us, and just walk into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been a gift for many people and for all of us collectively. Actually, people have had the chance to experience what they haven't had or haven't allowed themselves to have for a while. It feels like a great opportunity, as you said, to kind of capture that moment or capture that feeling moving forward. I'm interested in what we spoke a little bit about it before, about how we can protect wild places. And I went to a talk, it was a couple of years ago actually, and it was quite curious. It was a conservationist, and he kept talking about the monetary value of trees, and though I understand that conversation a little bit better now, I was kind of kept bristling. I was thinking, it's strange that that's all he talks about. And though I understand that is an element, it feels like historically, certainly where I live, that's the value of trees and of wood has never protected the spaces. Ultimately, it's actually been their downfall, and I know that you and I have sort of both interested in the idea of spaces, world spaces, being sacred or being places of remembrance or places of ritual or celebration. And I wondered if you've had any more thoughts about that, what you think about that, so that the wild places and the trees become of a deeper value perhaps than just their market value.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this question comes up in almost every conversation I have. And it's really interesting because I think we are, by our society, by our education, we are kind of conditioned to think about that everything has to have some kind of monetary value, and we need to attach a sign of euro, dollar, pound, whatever it is, to it. I think it's really necessary for all of us right now to look at intrinsic value of forest with really good attention, because I think there are things in life that we really can't put the market value tag on, like love, nature, family, human relationship. And my best example is that in the ancient times, and research shows that we had it in every culture and we lost it in many cultures, and only indigenous cultures continue to have that attitude, is we had sacred groves which were protected forests. They were not protected from industry, because of course industry didn't exist then. They were protected from overuse, overproduction. So we were not allowed as human community to actually take anything from this forest at all. We were not allowed to take wood, to harvest wood, to take mushrooms, berries, to collect medicinal herbs. We could do it all outside of the sacred forest, but not inside of them. And I was thinking a lot recently, what were these places for? I mean, of course, our ancestors had a religion which was totally based, you know, it was based on respecting nature and respecting what is visible and invisible in nature, and that big spirit, that great spirit of nature, that living the life itself. I think we were much more aware and respectful of that. But on the other level, I was thinking, well, if we went to these places, what were we doing there? And what comes to me at what I'm doing when I go to these forest places where I find really magical corners of the forest is I basically look for the dream time that I think has been lost. And I go there to dream, and I go there to not just like to dream, to daydream, but to dream about what is to emerge, what is emerging, and what wants to come through, and to what is asking me to work with it, if you see what I mean. So I'm going there to learn from nature, to see the patterns, to see how I can apply these life patterns in my life, in my art, to get inspired. And I think we desperately need these places where we go without necessity to be always producing and putting our hands in the dirt with the tools to be able to grow things. I mean, it's a metaphorical way to basically to extract. Mm-hmm. I think once we shift and say, okay, well, this is a place for enjoyment, not for extraction. I think as soon as we make this decision, something magical happens. Then nature says, okay, now I'm going to show you things that you really need to see and to learn, and that are ready for the level of your perception. And I think it's a must. So for me, this is absolutely necessary to start. It's not just to protect life, because otherwise we disappear, we die, there is no biodiversity, there is no food, so we kind of disappear as species. Of course, it's important, but it's still very anthropocentric perspective. I think we need those spaces to really realize that we need to allow nature to do its own thing.
Yeah.
And then I think our life will change as well.
You've reminded me, actually, my friend told me this extraordinary story. I just really liked it. She was on a film set, and she was waiting, like you do on a film set. She was waiting for something, and she was by the docks, and the Docklands was quite heavily wooded. And she just sat and kind of thought, I'm just going to sit and wait. So she sat completely still, kind of just thinking or not thinking for a long time. And after 25 minutes, a seal swam right up to her and just sat in front of her. She didn't even know there were seals. There weren't supposed to be any seals living there. It's not a place that's famous for seals or sea seals. And I remember her telling me this. She was like, gosh, I'd forgotten how important sitting still is and quietly. And that sort of changed everything for her, keeping hold of that experience that actually, if you just sit still and quietly, I mean, what an amazing gift to receive, you know, to be visited by a seal.
This is beautiful. I think it's really beautiful metaphor, and I think it teaches us so much. What I realized on my last journey into the forest, we had a full moon celebration last Friday, and we stayed in this really, really magical place. We were 8 people, and we had a fire. We spent the whole night. I was not sleeping. And what sits with me and what stays with me in these days is that nature is communicating constantly. It communicates within itself, within its self-complex being, but it's also communicating to us. And we're just not hearing. We're not listening because we are so preoccupied with our business. But our business is so short-lived, and it's so kind of, it's so superficial in a way as well. I'm not judging. Of course, you know, we need to do things that we have to do every day. But I think I call it expanding. So for me, I call it expanding sacred space and time. So imagine if you have 1 week of your life, 1 month of your life, and you say, okay, I'm going to start slowly to spend more time outside of kind of everyday normality, outside of everyday ordinary. I'm going to go to nature. I'm going to go and sit. I'm going to create this sacred space and time for me to not do anything and to just be and listen very, very attentively and very carefully. And every day you do just a bit more. Every month you do a bit more. Maybe you include like a full moon celebration or a new moon celebration. Maybe you take a whole day out in nature. And I think then something really shifts, because when we start having that time, I think then the magic can really start coming through into our life.
Yes, it's it feels like we've had the opportunity to sort of have a little practice at pausing and a little practice at slowing down. And also another thing I find very encouraging actually is that people seem to have enjoyed it. Not everyone, of course, but quite a lot of people, certainly in my world, have enjoyed being able to slow down or pause or stop and just kind of be in their gardens or in their park or in the forest or by the sea. So it feels like there's the possibility of maintaining that if we allow ourselves to. I wondered, in connection with that, I know you and I before have spoken about storytelling, quite interestingly actually, sort of the difference between poetry and storytelling, which is interesting. And I know that, or I think I'm right in saying, you had a bit of a change in your attitude or perspective towards stories. And I wondered if you could speak a little bit about how stories or storytelling connects for you with the eternal forest, or as your practice as an artist.
Thank you. So it's interesting, because in the past I was not really so much into stories. I think I was more about the moment and really being present, and what comes in the moment, it was very brief and it was like a lightning effect, and then you kind of get inspiration and make art. But I think with Eternal Forest, what happened is Eternal Forest started revealing its own story. So I believe actually now that the project, I call it a project, it's something else, it's a being for me. I think Eternal Forest has its own story, and it wants to tell its story through me and through other people, of course, as well, because now I started collaborating with other people. So the story becomes this complex, multi-layered, multi-connected thing. It's a being itself. I think the story itself is like a language of Eternal Forest, and it constantly is asking to tell another chapter and to open another page. So the main thing that happened last year is Eternal Forest Manifesto appeared. So what happened is when I was working for the Biennale de Courouges, when I was preparing my series of artworks, I decided that it's time to write something which could be like a core of Eternal Forest. And as soon as I made this decision, I was locked in my studio maybe for a month. And for 1 month, I was writing Eternal Forest Manifesto, which is quite a long piece. It's a poetry piece I referred to it as an oral tradition. So it came to me and it came on paper. I had to capture what was coming through. It actually more close to oral tradition because it has so many repetitions, invocations. When you read it, it really feels like it can be read and it must be read by many people. It always repeats, it goes in cycles and circles. And that piece is about the story of Eternal Forest and how Eternal Forest has these cycles of life and death, and it's absolutely fine, and how we as human beings can transform our vision to basically see that and to be able to live with that. And how it relates to the whole project is I believe that manifesto has a potential to become a real oral piece to be transmitted from person to person and from language to language. So at the moment, for example, we have it translated already. It's written in English, it's translated in Portuguese, and now it will be published in French. Although in France, we don't have an Eternal Forest Sanctuary possibility yet, somehow somebody reached out to me and said, well, we would like to translate it in French and publish it. So for me, this is like a link with a place that is going to call us to emerge this sanctuary there. We don't know where. We don't know how, through who. I know it's going to happen in the next couple of years. So this manifesto is read every time in the forest.
For me, the exactly as you said, the stories and poetry, particularly the oral traditions of both of those things, spoken word, absolutely fits in the forest. It just seems to make kind of sense. And also I love the idea of in the truest sense of the sort of oral tradition of both of those things, that they get added to and slightly changed by other tellers. But it also made me think about how a thing that happens in forests and feels like it's always happened is people start to tell their stories of other forests or other times they were there, and that there's a lot of joy in that. And it feels like that feels like another opportunity for sort of community connection and building, just being in that space and telling a story. You know, it doesn't have to be anything rehearsed.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because I know you've had sort of community gatherings within this within this, and I wondered if you have people sort of shared and told stories. Has that happened?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, actually, this is how the whole project started, because the very, very beginning of the project was in 2018, and I spent some time with local communities around the area where they had a lot of fires due to huge amount of monocultures. And
eucalyptus?
It's eucalyptus monocultures that are produced for paper, and real biodiverse forests that they are almost non-existent. They're kind of invisible, right? So it's invisible forest. And so in the film, when you watch the film, there is no forest shown, and many people ask me why I don't show the forest. But people talk about their relationship to the forest through their own way of storytelling. Everybody has a story to tell, and everybody has memories from childhood and some previous experiences and current life that connects them to these little pockets of land which they call forest. When you go there, it's a few trees usually, and it's a little passage, and maybe it's a piece of stream, and maybe it's really beautiful and magical and shade and everything, but they're not really big stretches of land that we can call forest, for example, in Eastern Europe or in Russia, where I come from, or in Canada, and so on. So, but I think the story is more important for me, and knowing the story and letting people through their voice tell the story, than going and planting trees with people. So the both things are important, and both things are going to happen. But what I'm trying to do now is really let this common voice emerge to tell the story of the forest through people's voices, and to see what is really there. And what is the bigger dream? Because I'm offering my dream, but then I'm inviting everybody in the circle and saying, well, what is your dream? And what is your take? And what is your own experience? And I've seen a lot of examples around me, how my friends who never, ever, ever spoke to me about forests suddenly turn around and start discovering things. And we're having these amazing conversations. And yeah, and it's not just telling a story, it's actually living the story. See what I mean? Because it's a real life experience.
Well, it kind of doubles up on itself, because I was thinking about times when people spend time together in the forest around a fire or during their daytime, and they tell a story, and then that itself becomes a story. So it's kind of, you know, it acorns are dropped of the next story. So there's something about the process of storytelling in a forest that creates other stories, in the same way that trees create other trees and plants create other plants. So it feels really natural to me that happens. It's so beautiful. I know that you're aware, because you've helped me and supported me with this, but I'm exploring and kind of valiantly trying to defend, I suppose, hope and promote hope as a energy that can be used to encourage positive change. And I know you know a little bit about that. I've had quite a lot of resistance to discussing it, which has been really interesting over the last year, because I think people think I'm talking about wishful thinking, or, you know, closing your eyes and blowing out a candle. And I'm sort of more interested in hope, to move us away from despair and to move us into action. And I think it can help sort of encourage people to actually try to do things. And I wondered what you think about that, and what your take on hope is. Obviously, it goes without saying you don't have to agree with me, but I was just interested in what you think about hope, particularly relating to your endeavour.
Yeah, I think... I think for me, a lot of things shifted and changed over the last 3 years since this project began. I was more working with the mindset and in the state of, you know, letting go, first of all, and not being attached, having a lot of inspiration from Buddhism and Zen Buddhism and Tibetan tradition. I was just like not thinking about hope. And then I realized that, well, maybe we can be not attached to the result, to the outcome, or to exactly how things happen. But I think when we start talking about a 1,000-year project and a 1,000-year eternal forest, 1,000 eternal forest sanctuaries, it's just impossible not to live in the state or in the presence of hope. And then hope becomes something else, because, of course, I've got no idea how this is going to happen, and I have zero attachment to what's going to happen, especially when I die, which is, you know, people can take it to the level they want, and the eternal forest itself will be working itself through people, and we'll be calling the right people, and I trust that. So my hope is that, you know, my role is just to set it up, to give inspiration, to give actually hope to people that this is possible, that a different way is possible, and then just let go. So I lost this contradiction that I was living with before, that hope is opposite to non-attachment or to let go of things. And so I started trusting that, well, maybe hope is actually a useful thing for us humans, and maybe we need it, especially now that there's so many situations that kind of feel pretty hopeless. But I think there is, to me, it's like yin and yang. We always need to see both perspectives, and we need to see the light and the darkness. And it's like eternal interplay. It's always there. So I think Eternal Forest is totally working with hope, and actually thinking even further. I think maybe this is something for all of us to rediscover, because maybe we have assumptions about how we see hope, and maybe these assumptions are not working anymore. And maybe this is why collectively we are still a little bit struggling to make, you know, that big step forward as a society.
Well, I do think it takes courage. And I also think because there's so much despair, and there's so much pain and loss and fear of failure and cynicism, there's so much of that, that it feels to me like in order to rebalance that, that's why I've kind of set myself on the side of hope, because it does feel out of balance. But I think I also, interestingly, I used to think that hope belonged in the future. And so a little bit like you, I used to struggle with that a bit, because I was interested in being present and not being particularly attached to results. And that contradicted this idea I had of hope being about attachments and hope being in the future. And actually, it can be, but it also can be absolutely about the present, as you said. And it also absolutely can be not about being attached to results, but more about using it to give you strength and to give other people strength to at least try, I suppose. At least try. And it also can just help people to be happier, I think. And that sometimes makes things easier.
Yeah, to be lighter. I think to be lighter and more joyful. Because also that I noticed that a lot in the activism world, in the world of activism, there is a lot of struggle, of course, and there is a lot of passion, but I feel sometimes there is also like feel that the change maker and activism world is very close to burnout, because there's a lot of beautiful efforts and collective efforts, and a lot of things don't work. Because our systems in our society, some of them are just not working anymore. So when these efforts clash with the old ways, of course, a lot of people, they just lose faith and they lose hope and they go and they're always close to burnout. So sometimes you need to fail really badly and hit the bottom and to go out of it with a new joy and discover that basically sometimes it's not about achieving something right here, right now. Maybe it's about building foundation for something to be done by other people. So it depends on the concrete situation. But also I decided that with Eternal Forest, I'm just going to be super, super relaxed about time. And I'm not going to, of course, I'm always here, present every day, moving things forward and kind of being available for the project. But I also feel like I don't want to be always at the edge of burnout because I need to complete all these steps and tasks and all of it. I think it's about how do we do things differently with joy.
Yeah, absolutely. And also allow ourselves and each other to experience joy even in the thick of all of these challenges, even in the eye of the storm.
Yeah.
Because joy feels really important as well. And actually, I'm always interested in resistance. You know, if you bring up something like hope or joy or happiness and there's a sort of resistance to it, it's interesting, isn't it? It's like, why is there a resistance to experiencing hope? Why has talking about joy become taboo, for example? It's always worth looking at that a little bit. And considering there are such battles to fight on so many fronts, burnout is a huge thing that we have to address in ourselves and with each other. So that feels like to have more of a reason to be able to just go and be quiet somewhere, and to be sort of fed by that feels Brilliant. I'm going to ask you some really big questions now, so if they're a bit too much. Aside from sort of, or as well as, in addition to connecting and reconnecting with the natural world, considering the challenges and the tasks we have, what other actions do you think that we human people need to take to make the possibility of the future and the near present be brighter?
Beautiful question, thank you. So for me, what I'm working on is I'm just changing my attitude every day to things that I see I'm a little bit judgmental about, or things that maybe I see in a darker way. Always checking in with myself, you know, how can I shift my attitude every day just a little bit to be available, to be happy, to be joyful, to continue, and also to inspire other people? Because, of course, when we work with others, and we always work with others in our businesses, in our art projects, in theater, in collaborations, I mean, in a film, we keep telling stories, as you say, right? So how can we show up for ourselves and for the community and communities in a way that we are ready and we really can hold the space when needed, we can break down when needed and other people can hold. But it's also changing the attitude in terms of being kind of really let go of the old patterns, kind of shed the old skin,
yeah,
and let go of things that are not on the same level where we are called to be. So in other words, you know, how can we be lighter, be more grateful, trust life? For sure, for me, this is the basis. And then start trusting each other. And I think that is also really, really important in my particular project, in my life. But I think for the whole society, because I think that that basic trust in life and in the other human being, I think that's where we are still very much not there yet. We are kind of behind, because I think without real trust and collaboration, we are not able to build something that's different. We're always gonna fall onto the old pattern because it has been supporting us actually for a very long time. It's been effective, but it's not effective anymore. And we see how it is not effective. It's been shown to us as a mirror. So for me, in terms of changing our perspective on things, on life, changing our attitude is really the main action right now. But in terms of nature, human relationship, I think the biggest change we need to make, and this is again in our psyche, is our anthropocentric point of view on the world. So I think if we can, each of us, of course, it starts with inside. If we can shift that, I think so many things will shift automatically.
Yeah. I 100% agree with everything you've said. And I think there's, just circling back to earlier, there are connections for me with these things and stories again, because I think one of the challenges that we face are the stories that we tell and are told about other human beings tend to be one kind of story, tend to have quite a negative message and a fear sort of driven narratives, you know, other people are doing this bad thing, other people aren't. So it's about that as well, about having the sort of courage to see, to look at things in a different way. As you described as well, just noting what you're doing. I don't know if you're being judgmental or if you're closing down or if you're not being as present as you might be able to be. And that works hard, isn't it? But it's also, or it feels to me like it's immediately rewarding.
Yeah, I think so too, because you see your own change of being if you start really being attentive to your reactions to everyday things. And I think it's really in everyday life that it comes through. You don't need to go far. You don't need to go to another part of the world to test yourself. It's there. It's always present. I think this is the good thing, because we are our own tool. I think until we really get to know ourselves better, get to know our nature. And in that sense, natural world is supporting us incredibly. It's always there to support us. It's always there to say, okay, I'm here for you. do your process, come to me, do your process, by yourself with other human beings, and yeah, see if a new story can emerge.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that anyone that's listening knows how they can help you or support you or find out more or join in. And I wondered what was the best first stop for that for you.
Thank you so much for giving this opportunity for me to share. So at the moment, the project is, of course, in development and I'm building a new website for it. However, I have my own artistic website and people can sign up to regular news. They can also join our growing Facebook group, which is called Eternal Forest. There is a lot of interesting things happening there. People start stepping in and telling their stories and sharing, you know, their kind of relationship with forest, their ideas from around the world. I am launching now Eternal Forest Conversations. There will be monthly conversations starting in June, and there will be public conversations, and we will have practical aspects. So I will always have a chance for people to collaborate, to meet, and to share new ideas, old ideas, you know, how we can create a collaboration in one part of the world. At the moment is a bit organic because I'm still looking for how things can emerge. If there are artists, they usually, and if they're interested in collaborating, they usually just reach out, and then case by case we see what we can do. For example, if somebody says, well, I have a community where I live, I have a piece of forest and we would like to do something, we sit together and we think how we can do it. If it's an organization like an arts organization, foundation, of course, I'm always happy to make a talk, to share my work, to show the film. There are so many aspects of the project that now I can share. And once there is more possibility to travel, although I'm not so keen on travel, is I would love to see places and I would love to explore how we can co-create Eternal Forest experiences with other people who are actually already doing this kind of work and maybe already working with their own communities and their own kind of local natural spaces. But in the next 1-2 months, I'll have a working website. And of course, if there are people who are interested in partnering, offering help, offering support, there will be space for that. Right now, if somebody wants to support the project through funding, there is also a possibility to do that through PayPal, through Patreon. I have a Patreon campaign going on right now, and it's ongoing. So there's many, many ways.
Okay, and I'll make sure that all that information is in the copy as well and keep people updated on that. It's brilliant. It's just such a wonderful project. And lastly, just before we go, I was going to ask if you'd mind reading an excerpt from the poem, Evgeny. Is that okay? Or...
Of course, yes. I would love to.
Oh, good. Fantastic. What a treat.
I would love to read you a short poem, which is part of the film as well. So the poem runs through the film like a red thread. And it's a visual poem as well. It's in the book. It's from 2018. And this is the first poem I wrote in the cycle of Eternal Forest Project. So I'm going to read you this one in
English. Thank you so much.
Single tree where sacred forest no more. Barren vein, once a myriad strata. Rare voice, a relic of obsolete song. Idle seeds, race, perpetual, cycle. Roots, once severed, grow forever apart. Vacant dream amidst humid desert. Instant past of the future, all we can plant. Every word spoken here is present. Living memory, die cry for emergence.
Oh, so lovely. So lovely to hear it again. And I'll make sure that I connect there's a link to the film, I think, that people would be. Yeah.
I can give a link to the full presentation on the project, which has all the information and film and all the links, and people can go and explore and click and enjoy.
It's fantastic. I really recommend watching the film. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's just really beautiful. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for sharing your poem. And I hope that, I'm sure that many people listening will connect with you and get involved in it. It's such an encouraging, beautiful, hopeful thing. Thank you for your courage and your conversation. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Fantastic. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed all the tree talk, and maybe take the opportunity as soon as you can to get up there in the forest. Happy Lammas. I'm looking forward tomorrow to going to Highgate Woods and celebrating Lammas and this beautiful time of high summer with a hint of autumn in the air and all the hope that comes with that. See you next time. Bye.